So I guess to start, can you just kind of give me an overview of how the COVID-19 vaccine is allocated to communities around the state, and specifically how the state determines the number of doses each community receives?
Yeah, no, it's a fantastic question. So we get in usually right before the start of the month how much vaccine that we're getting in. And this applies to the Moderna and Pfizer. It looks like the Johnson & Johnson might be slightly differently. And then what we do is we take the Department of Labor numbers, which include both resident and non-resident per census area, and we divide up the vaccine on a per capita or per rata basis for the census area. So we look at how many people are kind of in each group and divide it up and say, okay, we've got 300 doses going to this region, 200 doses going to this region, a couple thousand going to that region. The Moderna has to come in packages of 100, and so that makes some numbers a little bit challenging to be able to work through it. And then if there are multiple clinics or multiple dispensing sites in one region, then we work with that regional healthcare team to decide, you know, how is that going to be broken up. So for places like in Alaska, there are kind of like three other clinics, and so a box of 100, like the first month, went to each one just because you couldn't divide them up smaller than that. That is separate from the IHS allocation. So IHS gets a separate allocation that comes from the federal government. They take those numbers, we send that to the tribes, and they divide it up actually by THO, and the THO is based on population, and then they tell us back based on population how much each THO gets, and then we distribute the vaccine to those regions. We really try to round up in all of our rural regions to get vaccine out, understanding the limitations and getting it there. And then one of the, I think, the big challenges out in on Alaska in your region has been the number of people who may not be counted in the Department of Labor statistics. And so we've been trying to work with the fishing industry to get a better sense of what their numbers are so that we can help count that as part of the denominator. This is all the process now. The very first month was slightly different, and there we allocated based on long-term care residents as well as hospital staff, because that was the very first tiers that were open. And that was because two things. We saw such high mortality in long-term care residents and staff, and then to make sure that the healthcare infrastructure stayed open. So that included CHAPs and included healthcare workers across the state. But places with bigger hospitals had a little bit more that first month, and then we went to this pro rata per capita. So the Johnson & Johnson were getting a large, well, relatively large dose in for the first 2 weeks, and then don't expect much the next week, and then potentially more the week after that. And so we're doing the same thing where we're just dividing it up on a per capita basis and sending it out. And then on top of it, we have additional vaccine coming in a couple different ways. So we have vaccine coming in through a federal pharmacy partnership where pharmacies get federal vaccine that's totally separate from the state allocation. We see Department of Defense and VA getting totally separate allocation that comes in. And then there's a new partnership that just started with the federal government on FQHCs and getting vaccine out there. And seeing the numbers in on Alaska and along the Aleutian chain, we have been pushing hard to advocate that the two FQHCs that start that program are out in the Aleutian chain, including on Alaska, so that they can get separate allocation headed out there as quickly as possible. We've also really been arguing that places like on Alaska need that vaccine because they don't have access to things like the federal pharmacy partnership, because there's not a Walgreens or a Fred Meyers or these big pharmacy partnerships in general. So we're hoping to be able to really get more vaccines because of that partnership as well, but that's really decided at a federal level.
Okay, and so to clarify, you do now count non-residents in your population count and allocate doses for them as well?
Yeah, so we've been doing that for the last 2 months, residents and non-residents. And then we have also added into our March calculations additional people really working in the fishing industry that were not counted in the Department of Labor's way that they count residents and non-residents. But so we count residents, non-residents by Department of Labor, and then what we think is kind of a missing group of people from the Department of Labor statistics.
And those are specifically people in the fishing industry?
Exactly. So we reach out to the fishing industry and we're like, okay, how many people do you have in the Bering Sea who are served by places like on Alaska, so that we can get a better sense of what the real burden of, you know, the need to vaccinate looks like in different communities. Because all we have to go to work on really is the Department of Labor statistics, both resident and non-resident data. That's from there. We've had some challenges getting additional numbers to make sure that we have the most accurate calculations possible.
Okay, so I know you addressed this a bit, but Alaska's leading the nation in vaccinations per capita, but it seems like compared to many other parts of the state, Unalaska's rollout has been moving slowly. I know in Sitka, more than half of the eligible population has been vaccinated, including teenagers 16 and over now. Here in Unalaska, through the Iluluk Family and Health Services Clinic, we're still vaccinating adults aged 50 and older. And while APIA has vaccinated a much broader range of the population, we still seem to be much further behind. I was wondering, could you speak to, like, what, in your best estimation, is the reason that Unalaska has been lagging behind these other communities in general vaccine allocation per capita?
I think it's two things. I think it is the number of people in the community that are not counted by the Department of Labor Statistics. There is also some concerns kind of on the THO numbers that are being calculated for the distribution there. That's really determined by the tribes on how many people in each THO really count and to be able to get vaccine out. So we don't have any insight into how those numbers are calculated. We just get that back from ANTHC. So I think there's a numbers part. You know, we're doing it on a very per capita basis across the board. I think the other challenge in Unalaska and that region is that places like Unalaska serve a lot more people than like St. Paul. And so when you have to ship one box of 100, you might get one community that's highly vaccinated and another community that is not as much vaccinated. And so I think that there's been some just limitations in the numbers. But I think the bigger thing is just the number of people that have kind of been uncounted or not fully counted in the statistics. And that's why we've been trying to look at every way we might be miscounting the numbers to be able to increase the allocation to be able to get more people vaccinated quickly. But we're really trying to make it a data-driven decision. And clearly, the numbers we have don't seem to be fully representing how many people are there.
And local providers here have mentioned that Unalaska just really doesn't fit the state matrix. And I know this is true for a number of communities around the state, but we have a small Alaska Native population, no hospital, no long-term care facility, a large non-resident workforce. Are those factors limiting our ability to get more doses, or is this even relevant anymore?
Yeah, I mean, I think it does affect, as I mentioned at the beginning, the hospital and long-term care resident component of the very first allocation, I think, was a much more urban rather than rural focus because that's where most long-term care facilities and hospitals were. And that was really based on federal guidance and based on what's called the ACIP on the highest mortality and keeping the most densely kind of concentrated hospitals up and running. So that was the reason for that. So I think that impacted, as you mentioned, the resident versus non-resident workforce is a big difference. And then there is a lot of vaccine coming in from the IHS allocation, and that has really, I think that we see the largest discrepancies in how far down the line people have been able to vaccinate, really based on their native population. Communities with really high native populations have been able to do a lot more vaccination in a short period of time than communities that have not had as much IHS allocation. And so we've been trying to kind of account for that in as many ways as possible by getting a vaccine, again, by the FQHC partnership or this federal pharmacy partnership, as well as looking at the numbers.
Okay, yeah, I was going to ask about that, if places like Sitka or the YK Delta and others who have been able to vaccinate more of their populations, if it has been through the tribal rollout. I mean, I know this isn't quite in your wheelhouse, but can you tell me a bit about how the tribal rollout affects how many vaccines a community will get?
Well, so the tribal rollout is completely separate from the state. So what happens at the federal level is they determine how much vaccine the state is going to get. And then they have what's called an SNS, a sovereign nation supplement. And that is an additional amount of vaccine that comes in. The tribes had an option to have that either administered and really delivered to them from IHS, or they could use the state to help the vaccine actually physically get there. Think of the state as kind of like the Amazon delivery service for the vaccine. But the state is not the one who makes the decision on like allocation priorities, who gets it, you know, what tiers they go through. That is all really the tribe's decision on how they want to get that vaccine in. So every month we get a number, and it's like, this is the number that is a part of this sovereign nation supplement. And again, we send that to the tribes. That's divided up by THO, and then they say, okay, this is how much is going out to each region, and then we ship it out when people are ready to order and to get out. So that's all decided at the federal level and then the tribal level. But it does make a big difference in communities. I mean, I think we as a state have been incredibly fortunate to have the tremendous partnership with tribes, as well as the VA and DOD. It's added an ability to get extra vaccine in the state, as well as extra vaccinators to help. And what we're seeing is some regions that are now becoming, you know, saturated with vaccine, they've been doing 16 and above, are sending vaccine to other areas. I know that some tribes have elected to send additional vaccines on Alaska to be able to move forward. And we see many regions where they have opened up all of their vaccine to, you know, Native and non-Native beneficiaries, which has allowed us to all move faster together. So at the end of the day, it's really been a big difference in getting people vaccinated quickly, and it's allowing us to move vaccine around to places that don't have as much vaccine as fast as we possibly can. Alaska is definitely not the only community that is under-vaccinated, so we have a series of communities that haven't been able to progress nearly as quickly as some other ones, and we're just hoping to move everyone forward as fast as we possibly can.
Right. Thank you. And I know last month the state announced it would allow seafood industry workers from other states equal access to the COVID-19 vaccine. And for us in the Aleutians, that's a big deal since the majority of our processing plants workforce are not Alaska residents. What are you doing for non-resident, and I guess resident seafood workers? And are there any obstacles? If so, who could help remove those?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of obstacles. I think the first thing is just making sure that there's vaccine, you know, making sure that there's enough vaccine to vaccinate that population in general. Second of all, just having vaccinators, enough people to actually do the work. There are some huge logistical challenges with vaccination as well, you know, the two shot, making sure that it is, you know, kept in the right storage, that it doesn't have any problems with the temperature changes are all quite large obstacles. I would also say this kind of minimum shipment has been a really large obstacle to our more remote regions. You know, you might not have 100 healthcare workers in one village. And so, you know, do you do your whole town? We're trying to move our tiers actually bigger to really allow communities to be able to vaccinate kind of one community at a time if needed, given some of the geographic challenges, or be able to kind of work through the seafood processing kind of, you know, one ship at a time. We're also working a lot with the companies to encourage their partnership, both having vaccinators, being able to, you know, help with administration. We've also had examples where seafood workers have gotten their first shot down in Washington State, and then Washington State actually sent up the second dose of vaccine to be able to provide the second dose. So trying to work closely with Washington State on timing to make sure that we're able to kind of collectively work together to vaccinate people as quickly as possible.
And we in Unalaska are located 800 air miles from Anchorage, which has made transporting and storing the vaccine complicated. Do you hope the Johnson & Johnson vaccine can be helpful out here because its storage requirements are easier?
Yeah, but Johnson & Johnson's a lot easier in that sense. The storage is easier. It's also one shot. So that makes a really big difference as well. So there's a lot of hope with that. I think my hesitation is the fact that we just don't have a lot of it. So we're getting 8,900 doses between the IHS and state allocation in for at least the first couple of weeks. We're hoping that production will pick up after that. There's an additional 1,800 doses that we just learned are coming in via the Federal Pharmacy Partnership. And what that looks like. So we are looking at the best ways to get that out. Right now we're allocating again by census area to be able to get the vaccine out. But I think that that's just going to take a bit of time for the manufacturing to ramp up enough to make a really big impact in Unalaskan the fishing world. And so I don't want to wait for that. If we've got Pfizer, Moderna, and are ready to go, then let's do what we can with what we got, and we can always circle back around to Johnson & Johnson once the production ramps up.
And local health care providers here seem to be pretty optimistic about the rollout, but I know many community members are not as optimistic. What about you? I mean, should we expect an influx of more vaccine in the next month or two?
Yeah, I do really think we should expect more, and individual Alaskans in Unalaska and non-residents should expect more. Our vaccine allocation in March was significantly more than February, and so that is allowing us to ship out more vaccine to every region. But as mentioned previously, there are some regions who are saying they don't need any state allocation. And so we're reallocating that to regions who do need more state allocation. So I think, you know, we all rise together with this. So as we have more vaccine in the state, we're able to get more out quickly. I've often felt like vaccine is a little bit like the sun, very limited in December and January, and it's coming back quickly right now. And I think we're going to really hit a turning point in the next month and a half in vaccine. So I think we're going to make a lot of progress here shortly.
Can you give a timeline at this point when you expect Alaska will be vaccinated enough for herd immunity?
That is up to each individual Alaskan, I think, is really the big question. That becomes a little bit harder to predict. There's some challenges to that. We know that our children cannot be vaccinated and they're part of our herds. And so that does matter for being able to get to that point. How many people we need to have vaccinated to truly get herd immunity depends on how easily the virus moves from person to person. And so these variants make a big deal and a difference in that. We also don't think that the virus moves as easily between children. So, that R0 value is actually lower in kids, but it's going to be higher in some of these variants. So it really depends on how much we're able to keep these variants out moving forward. We have some communities where 80, 90, even 100% of adults are vaccinated. We start to see a real impact on hospitalizations and deaths, even at like 25, 30% of the adult community being vaccinated. So we start to see some really significant benefits early on from vaccination, even before we get to herd immunity. So it's, again, like the sun, it's not going to be an on and off switch. It's going to slowly kind of get better and better. I think we're going to start to see the impacts of vaccination. I think we're already seeing the impacts of vaccination. Places like the YK have had so many cases. And if you look at their epi curve, it is just dropped off. And part of it has because of just a lot of vaccines being able to really keep outbreaks at bay and make a really big difference in their case numbers. So really hopeful to see more of that. The other thing is we're getting people vaccinated who are more likely to get ill from the disease, you know, those who are older, those with underlying health conditions, then it kind of modifies what at least we see in this disease to being more of a mild disease or an asymptomatic disease because younger people tend to not have nearly as significant as symptoms, which is great. You know, if we have a lot of mild disease spreading, so be it. It's when we have a lot of people dying and overwhelming the healthcare system that is really the big concern. And all three of these vaccines look to do a really good job on that. And then we just need to make sure that we do everything we can to build vaccine confidence. People have really good questions about these vaccines and want to make sure that people have the chance to ask their questions, be able to see the primary literature, to be able to understand what went happened and how do they really kind of look at safety and efficacy and making sure that people feel confident in getting the vaccine. And how many people choose to get the vaccine will also determine how quickly we get there. So that's a big factor.